So I thought I'd take a break from current goings on and take a look at one of the most enigmatic and mysterious figures in Western literature, and that would be Captain Ahab of Herman Melville's masterpiece Moby Dick, also known simply as The Whale. I knew of the old movie with Gregory Peck, but first read the book while I was backpacking around Spain many years ago. I loved it because of the high adventure, the wandering under the heavens undertones. But most of all, what really captured me was that when you read Moby Dick, the sea seems to be splashing you in the face. It's almost as if the pages are dripping with brine and seaweed, tattered nets and rigging. And as somebody who has more of a spiritual connection to the sea than with forests or mountains, that's quite the read. Moby Dick isn't just a book about a madman who chases a whale around the world either. It's infused with biblical prophecy, foreboding, mysticism, and the lore of the oceans from all cultures and all people, as well as like many, many, many pages about how the whaling industry actually operated, and many pages of that. Like other enigmatic masterpieces, though, Moby Dick has been debated and puzzled over ever since it was published in 1851. It has a contempt for the safe lives and good manners of the landlubbers. It embraces tough and hearty sea dogs. It's deeply politically incorrect by today's standards, but it also has things to say about morality, obsession, democracy, and freedom. But what I'd like to focus on here is the man at the heart of it all, Captain Ahab, though Moby Dick is narrated through another character, a young man called Ishmael. It's Ahab that everybody remembers. Even the name Ahab is drawn from a wicked Hebrew king who, after his death, had dogs and pigs lick his blood, that being a particular insult to the people of that part of the world, of course. In Moby Dick, Ahab hardly even appears at all until 133 pages in, but he's spoken about and referred to. There's quite a build-up. There's something ominous and not quite right about him. In the chapel scene at the beginning, Father Maple tells the story, again from the Old Testament, of Jonah and the whale. Jonah refused to obey God and set sail on his own course, only to have God cast a storm over him and a whale swallow him. One of the many curious things about Moby Dick is that it often feels like a sequel to a book that was never written. Ahab has already been through the fight with the whale. Ahab is crippled, scarred, and tortured. He walks, using one of Moby Dick's teeth as a peg leg, clunking and thumping across the wet boards of the Pequod. And yet, this is where the story begins. Not with Ahab repenting or turning to God, but with refuting what seems to be any higher authority over himself. As Ahab says, "What I've dared, I've willed, and what I've willed, I'll do. They think me mad, Starbuck does, but I'm demoniac. I'm madness maddened, that wild madness that's only calm to comprehend itself. The prophecy was that I should be dismembered, and I lost this leg, and now prophesy that I will dismember my dismemberer." His rage and will are enough, and in Melville's soaring rhetoric, we touch on an aspect to Ahab that makes modern liberals very uncomfortable. Ahab, through sheer will and his ability to bend the will of everyone else to his own, bears many similarities to certain 20th century dictators, the chapter The Masthead being a standout. It's worth remembering that the Pequod is only supposed to be out hunting whales generally. That is what the investors paid for and the crew signed up for. But once out to sea, Ahab makes it clear to the men that he only has one whale on his mind, and he doesn't care who loses money or what dangers may be involved. What's more, to first shipmate Starbuck's amazement, he is able to whip the men up into a frenzied enthusiasm. The men would follow Ahab, and they do, to the bitter end. As Ishmael describes it, "All that most maddens and torments, all that stirs up the lees of things, all truth with malice in it, all that cracks the sinews and cakes the brain, all the subtle demonisms of life and thought, all evil to crazy Ahab, were visibly personified and made practically assailable in Moby Dick. he piled upon the whale's white hump the sum of all the general rage and hate felt by his whole race from Adam down. And then, as if his chest had been a mortar, he bursts his hot heart shell upon it. Ahab himself says, "The path to my fixed purpose is laid with iron rails, whereupon my soul is grooved to run over unsounded gorges, through the rifled hearts of mountains under torrent beds. Unerringly I rush, naught's an obstacle, naught's an angle to the iron way." To say that Ahab suffers from monomania would be both a cliche and an understatement. Ahab is beyond obsessed. He's accepted, indeed embraced, his fate, and that fate is tied to Moby Dick, to the destruction of Moby Dick, and no man, no forces of nature, no merchants, and no God will get in his way. All and everything must bow to his will and his destiny. When Ahab is asked by the captain of another ship to help him find his son who went overboard, Ahab understands that they have encountered Moby Dick, who must therefore be nearby. He refuses to help because he doesn't want the whale to escape. And so you can see why this makes many a modern Western liberal wince. After all, if natural laws can be flouted to the degree that Ahab does, then so too can the norms of liberal democratic Western societies and political correctness. Ahab is the archetype we've all been warned about all our lives in various guises. He's the man who's going to manipulate the masses and bring them into, under his will, into open rebellion against anything he feels like. But is it just hatred and revenge that fuels this supernatural drive? I think not. I think there's something deeper and more profound revealed in Moby Dick. And for that, we have to look at the nature of Moby Dick himself and what he represents. Moby Dick isn't just a whale, but also a legend, also the source of superstitions, and supposedly he's immortal. He's as much a sea-bound metaphysical entity as a supersized sperm whale the size of an island. In fact, it's almost as if the sea turns around Moby Dick. When he arrives, the sea swells and churns. Swarms of seagulls signal his emergence and presence. He is unknown and unknowable, and that's why he's white, the colourless, the formless, the mystery. But it's in the key passage that I think we can see Ahab's real drive and spirit, which is called the paste mask. "Hark ye yet again," says Ahab to Starbuck, "the little lower layer, all visible objects, man, are but as pasteboard masks, but in each event, in the living act, the undoubted deed, there some unknown but still unreasoning thing puts forth the moulding of its features from behind the unreasoning mask. If man will strike through the mask, how can the prisoner reach outside except by thrusting through the wall? To me, the white whale is that wall, shoved near to me. Sometimes I think there's naught beyond, but 'tis enough. He tasks me, he heaps me. I see in him outrageous strength and an inscrutable malice sinuate. That inscrutable thing is chiefly what I hate, and be the white whale agent or be the white whale principal, I will wreak that hate upon him. Talk not to me of blasphemy, man. I'd strike the sun if it insulted me. For could the sun do that, then could I do the other, since there is ever a sort of play herein, jealousy presiding over all creations, but not my master. Is even that fair play? Who's over me? Truth has no confines." So Ahab views the white whale as the great unknown. Moby Dick should not exist, yet he does. For Faustian man, this is unacceptable. The Faustian drive is to unlock all secrets, to conquer all space and unravel all mysteries. There should be no empty spaces on the map and no mountains unclimbed, no atom unsplit. To accept the unknown is, as here Ahab explains, a cage and a prison. But Moby Dick represents something worse again. The great mystery is not a passive form, but a monster and a metaphysical entity which stands in opposition to the Faustian drive of Ahab. What's more, he bites back. Ahab confesses to Starbuck that he has no idea what it is that really drives him on and on across all the seas in pursuit of the white whale. Is it God? The sun? What? In truth, it's his fear at the caging of the Western spirit, to be hampered and entombed by the unknowable, by the pasteboard mask that needs to be broken through. So what Ahab is engaged in isn't just monomania and obsession. He's pitting the Faustian will against the nature of the universe itself. Most myths of this type that have come down through history, Jonah or Odysseus, the main character is subject to the whims of gods. He displeases God or is returning to God. He's tormented by God or gods. As we see with Moby Dick, though, this all seems to have happened in a story which came before, when Ahab first encountered the whale. Moby Dick, the Faustian myth, begins where other myths end. He presents himself not before the Almighty, but before emptiness and infinity, the undiscovered, the rolling endless oceans, the plains, space itself. A mythological whale the size of a mountain cannot be allowed to exist because it refutes and snubs his whole mode of being. Throughout the book, Moby Dick is compared to a mountain. It's fitting, indeed, that Ahab dies lashed to the side of it. How many mountains in the world still today have the frozen corpses of European men lashed to their rocks' faces? And was what drove them to climb those mountains any different, really, to what drove Ahab on? In Ahab's case, it isn't just that Moby Dick exists both as a legend and in physical form, but that he's also been crippled by him, wrecked by him, and left broken by him, and thus doomed to follow his fate to the bitter end. We get his most famous lines of all. Actual Faust attained all the knowledge of the world only to lose his soul and be dragged down to hell. Ahab lost his soul to the whale and was dragged down into the depths, forever to be lashed to the flanks of his nemesis. But as the prophecy foretold, one of his arms remained loose and seemed to wave in a beckoning gesture. Even in death, Ahab was demanding his men follow him after the great white whale and into the great unknown. Captain Ahab occupies a strange and dark place in the Western canon. He resonates with us because there's probably a little bit of Ahab in us all. And whereas the other cultures and peoples would be baffled by such a character, well, we know him all too well.